empathy, definition, a lot of audience participation, especially in the back row, because everyone sits in the back row that, like, I hope he doesn't pick me. So I'm almost going to go back there. So who would like to define empathy today? It's not okay. Empathy.
I think about empathetic identification as a three-step dance. One, if someone's talking with you, you try and hear the basic feeling that they're expressing. Two, you think about your own life and try and come as close to what you imagine they're experiencing and share that memory. And three, if they're feeling heard by you, they probably open up further and share more.
Well stated, thank you. Anyone else want to expand on what empathy is? How? What? Oh, absolutely.
I'll do it. I'll move it to you.
Oh, just simply put, it to me, it means just putting yourself in the other person's place exactly. What they're feeling, what they're thinking as much as you can.
Just to distinguish it from sympathy, which is feeling badly for someone, empathy, as was said, is trying to put yourself in their place.
That's right. Anyone else? Definition. Okay. What might be some people that you know, family members, famous people, people in history, that really exemplify empathy? What might be some people that come to mind that really live that life, that really you look at them and say, wow, what an empathetic person?
Well, Martin Luther King, without a doubt, is probably the most important thing that ever happened in our nation.
Absolutely. Martin Luther King, absolutely. Anyone else?
I think that Eleanor Roosevelt did a lot of work that was empathetic.
Eleanor Roosevelt.
Thich Nhat Hanh comes to my mind.
Absolutely. Good choice. Anyone?
Nelson Mandela.
Nelson Mandela. Anyone else?
Yeah. I don't remember his name, but the man who played the Passion of Christ, he played Jesus. I've listened to him outside of there, and he is completely empathetic man. I don't know what his name is. Do you know what his name is?
The actor who played
Well, Mel Gibson wrote it, but I don't know the actor's name.
I don't know. Jim Caviezel.
Well, if
Jim
you look
Caviezel.
Him up on YouTube, that man has got a lot of love in him.
Jim Caviezel.
Mother Teresa.
Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa.
Gandhi.
Gandhi, absolutely. Absolutely. So we're pretty clear on what it means to be empathetic, and we can give some examples. But what is empathy really dependent upon? What is the can't have empathy unless you have this skill. And it's, not everyone. So what is the skill needed to be really empathetic? I'm okay with going on.
I don't know about the one skill, but you have to abandon your own beliefs. So you have to be, I think you have to abandon your own to a certain, I think that when I think of empathy, I'm abandoning judgment, and that is the first wall to get over, and then I'm just trying to relate to the human emotions that everybody has.
Absolutely. Abandoning judgment, being open to another view or another opinion. Not as easy today, but it's worth it.
Judgment. We have to be non-judgmental.
Non-judgmental. Okay. Anything else? Any other skills needed? There is actually one I'm looking for. Oh.
You have to listen.
He's got it.
Everyone has the right answer. No wrong answer. wrong or right answers, but if you don't listen well, it's very hard to be empathetic. Listening, so important. What? Oh, someone back there? Anyone else want to expand upon listening? Oh, here's a trick for you. Test your listening skills. Ready? Don't answer this. She knows. What did I just say?
Could anyone expand on
it? Right,
this?
You got it.
And my thought of expanding on it would be to say you really have to forget what you need and think about what whomever you're interacting with needs.
Absolutely. Putting your needs, your personal needs, a little bit on the side and concentrating on the needs of those people that you're listening to.
Just wanted to say, some of us are therapists, and one term in the literature is listening with a third ear, which means listening what was said before, but also taking it in the context of that person's life, what you know about their dynamics, et cetera, so you can really understand what's beneath what they're saying also.
Going beyond what's said on the surface, what's behind it? And that could come up in a lot of different places. Someone came up to me and they said something very provocative here. And I realized it wasn't really the content or the subject matter. What I felt they were saying is, listen, I'm here. Recognize who I am. And I would like to engage you. I want you to acknowledge me. And I want to engage you in conversation. So that was behind it. That's an example of what you're saying. More. I think we have a hand up back there on the famous back row.
Right, I'm going to break with tradition and speak from the back row here. But, to me, empathy doesn't really have a lot about conversation. It's not really, to me, empathy is not about listening, because okay. Empathy is more like intuiting what the person is feeling.
Okay.
I don't think of it as engagement. In fact, I think words are sometimes counterproductive in trying to understand how another person is feeling. When I think of an empathetic person, I don't think of someone who's sitting there having a lot of conversations with people. I think it's people who develop an intuition for understanding how other people are feeling and what their needs are.
Okay.
It's just a different take on it.
So that's tuition, trying to have a deep understanding. What else?
I was thinking similar. I think you should, I'm Rick, by the way.
Hey, Rick.
I think if you're in touch with your own emotions, your own human experience, I think that helps a whole lot to be a listener, but to also be empathetic. I don't necessarily think it involves talking all the time, but to be in touch with yourself and to say, oh, like, I'm a human, I've felt this, so, and you're a human as well who has also felt this, so.
Finding the common ground, being know where you stand. We had a great conversation here with Reverend Brammer yesterday, and she really was such a great point in that she said we can listen to another viewpoint, we could try to empathize, but we don't have to give up who we are. We don't have to water down our opinion. We can still, this is the challenge, to be able to hold on to our beliefs, express them, but to keep the conversation going, not shut it down, and not a difficult task. So can you keep the conversation going, not make it offensive, not draw a line, but say, listen, we obviously have different opinions or viewpoints, but I'm interested in what you're saying and how you got there. I want to understand you a little better. I may not agree with you, but I would like to understand you. Please.
From an account I read yesterday of a man.
And none of it really helped him. It only made him more depressed. And then a friend came who, with permission, said, you know, could I massage your feet? So he took his shoes off and massaged his feet and never said a word. He spent that time with him. And that was the one thing that helped him, because the friend had the intuition, the intuitive sense, not to say,
absolutely. And you know, some of our work as chaplains, we're taught or directed to be a present. And that present doesn't always mean being encouraging or saying a lot, sometimes just being there and trying to assess or determine what that person is looking for. Sometimes they don't want a whole lot of conversation. Anyone else? Some thoughts, ideas? Anyone? Oh, we have a hand.
So I'm just saying, you do have, for me, as a therapist, I stand back and I watch the person, how they interact with someone else, their body language is how their shoulders are, what their eyes are doing, and then I know how to approach them. And I had taken a course on how to approach somebody where they're at. So wherever they're at, I've watched them, I've observed them, and I went in to where they are and then try to take them out of that.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. We have a gentleman back there.
Makes the most sense to me, that when I was thinking about this sort of binary thing we're talking about, between sometimes it's not about talking, well, sometimes it is about talking, but it's not, it's less about fixing the problem than it is about intuiting being, whether with word, deed, or action. It's more about meeting the person or situation where they are. That seems to be a pretty key point of empathetic behavior.
Okay. Absolutely. In fact, we're going to go through some blocks to empathy, and one of those blocks is exactly what you said, the desire to fix. We're going to fix it. Sometimes that's not what the person is looking for. Can we go to page... where are we? Blocks. Everyone have 10 obstacles to empathetic communication. Should be in one of your handouts. No, it's on the other side. Everyone have that? Did we get this? Or I can... is that, if it's not included, I can... No, that's not it. Okay, you know what? Let's go to dialogue versus debate. That's fine. Dialogue. What's the difference, without even looking at the sheet, what is the difference between dialogue and debate? Someone? So in a debate, there is a winner and a loser, like tonight. And there'll be a whole bunch of people that determine who won and who lost. But in an exchange, what is the goal? What is the goal in an exchange? And to expand on what you said. It's to foster understanding. It requires some listening. Being in the other person's shoes. Please. Right. Debate is to win your point no matter what. It's to win. It's a competitive exercise. Does it build relationships? Does it strengthen friendships? No. Does it? What happens? Does it have? What are the positive benefits of a debate?
I don't know about positive, negative.
Okay, or negative. What's negative?
You walk away if you're the loser, really hating the person almost because you lost to that person. And if you're a winner, you're silly enough to think, "Oh, I got a point here."
A winner.
I think there is a winner.
Right. You walk away not with better feelings of friendship or connection.
Right.
You're more distant. And sometimes you might even, after the debate, and if you've lost, then what happens? How do you walk away from that conversation if you've lost?
Usually angry.
Angry? What else?
Hurt. In my opinion, perfect. Because a debate where the, I'll get to you. A debate where it's, where there are rules and it, and there's a goal to inform, then you're right. You might look at the other side and say, wow, they're onto something. And I've learned something that I didn't know previously. Jenny.
That's the ideal. But in what you just said, sir.
Okay.
There are a lot of shoulds.
Yeah.
And shoulds is not the best word in the world.
Okay.
Because should puts demands on other people. And I think that's where the problem comes. It should be exactly what you both said, but it very rarely is, I think.
Okay. All right. There's a list here I like to... I'm sorry we don't have a copy of it.
We got somebody who wants to say something.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Please. This is just reformulating what has already been said.
Please
but
do.
A debate can clarify a problem that's murky and help people understand the different sides, different ways of looking at a problem.
Mm. So it's good for clarification on occasion when there are set rules and there's a certain amount of civility and respect and consideration. Those are the key things that have to come into play.
That's a very interesting point. I think it sort of dovetails with what we're talking about whether a debate can be a positive or a negative, and it has to do with connotation, and typically connotation has to do with what we bring to the table. So if you go into a debate and you lack empathy, then it will more than likely not be positive. But if all people, you know, debate and the difference between a debate and dialogue could be just as simple as structure. And typically dialogue between two people is not necessarily a structured thing, whereas a debate is something that is more structured. Mm. But that structure doesn't necessarily mean it would be a negative experience. That's typically what we bring to the table right. as a society.
Please. Why do you suppose she felt that way?
I think that she turned it into a bait, and what I said probably made a little more sense, and she got mad about it and unfriended me. It was kind of wild.
Okay.
So sometimes a conversation, as much as you want to be peaceful, ends up in a debate.
Okay. Interesting. So we don't want to alienate people. We want to try to keep them within our circle and be able to not damage the relationship or the connection after the discussion. Presentation. How, you know, presentation, it's been said, is 90%. So I could say something that's very benign and helpful, but if I yell it like this, it's a problem. Let me throw out some blocks for, that's a good point, absolutely. But just to get some reaction here, some obstacles to empathetic communication. Giving advice, as you said, fixing. You're telling the other person what they should think, what they should do. I think you should leave your boyfriend and find someone else to be with. Is that empathetic?
No,
that's a problem. Analyzing, interpreting or evaluating a person's behavior. I think you are taking this out on your ex-wife when you are actually frustrated about your divorce. That's a problematic thing, but it's common. Storytelling, moving the focus away from the other person and back to your own experience. This happened to me. And it's almost like one-upmanship, something to think about. Shutting down, discounting a person's feelings and trying to shift them in another direction. Quit feeling sorry for yourself. There's no reason to feel that way. That's kind of rough, isn't it? Toughen up. It's nothing. What are you going to do when you get to be my age? Correcting, giving that person your opinion or belief about a situation. Wait a minute, I never said that. You don't remember this. Or how about this one? Interrogating, using questions to figure out or change the person's behavior. When did this begin? When did you decide to do that? How did this get into you? So those are some blocks, some thoughts. On it. Now, we have a page here on debating versus exchanging. Can we get to that? Dialogue versus debating. Could we do a responsive reading on this one? I'll do the dark print, and we can do the together we can do the line afterwards. And it's just, this just illustrates the difference between dialogue and debating. And again, always open for discussion. This is an opinion. And always open to comments afterwards. So let us begin. Again, I'll do the bold face, and if everyone could follow with the line afterwards. Dialogue is the understanding of myself and others. I listen openly and compassionately with the view that I want to understand. Kind of interesting. Look, remember, check out the debate later and see which one of these are violated, if not all of them. I listen for strengths so I could affirm and learn and to hear other viewpoints. I speak for myself using my own experiences and understanding and examine my own assumptions. Again. I ask questions to increase understanding, and I am willing to temporarily suspend my beliefs.
I ask questions in order to control the conversation or to
confuse. I look for ways to affirm my own beliefs or gain. I concentrate on others' words, feelings, body language, and other modes of communication. Okay, I respect others' experiences as true and valid for them, and I want to work with others to come to new understandings. I respect the expression of feelings in myself and others. Thank you. I honor silence.
I am anxious in silence or use advantage.
I look for ways to keep the conversation going, even in conflict. Oh, I did? I'm sorry. Which one?
I allow others to complete their communications.
Oh. That was fitting. Very good. So, agree, disagree. What's your thoughts on some? Tell me. Think about some people you might deal with: family members, church members, in the workplace, in small groups. Do you ever encounter any of these? I deserve to be heard. You know, it's not always going to be split down the middle, but communication should be a two-way street. And sometimes there's always people in our lives that they kind of dominate the conversation, especially where you work in the cemetery. But that's a good point. Communication is always two-way, and if you're uncomfortable, I love the way you handled it. You said, listen, I would like to have a two-way conversation. Oh, okay. So we're gonna. But you know, what are the blocks here? You know, we've identified, I believe, some of the blocks, but we really haven't talked, or we haven't touched on why. Why do we have some people in our lives? I'm not putting you on the spot. I don't want to. But I think all of us have had people in our lives that they get 90 or 95% of the airtime. Why is that? Why do we allow that?
My name is Bob. Tell me your name again. Adam. I can relate to what you're saying. I find many times I take an interest and the other person doesn't return the interest. And I can't control that, but one of the things I'm trying to do is volunteer information. When they don't take the interest, I just say, you know, well, yesterday I had such a, that I have control over, that I can do.
Okay. Very good. Please.
So I agree with all that's been said, and Okay. Communication should be respectful, et cetera. But I just wanted to mention one thing. Sometimes, especially, you have to know who you're dealing with, but if it's a good friend, sometimes what's needed is confrontation. And sometimes a good friend would say, you know what I think you're really doing is, you know, one of the things you mentioned there. And that's confrontative. But sometimes people need to hear that. And sometimes it's only a good friend that's going to really tell you something that's uncomfortable. It should be done respectfully, but it's not always bad to tell someone what you think is going on for them to examine.
Because you're setting limits and you're expressing your needs. But what might prevent a person from doing exactly what you said? Very important. Other people, Cora? Fear, avoiding of conflict.
My father-in-law dominates all conversation. It's really all about him, always.
Okay.
And anytime you, it's like he's waiting for you to disagree so that he can then pounce on what you think. And if you try to set up a boundary, it doesn't work.
Okay.
It just, he's just said some of the rudest things to other family members. I just would stand there just with my jaw open. So I've just, and he also has no respect for physical space. So I just found that because I would get so stuck, I finally came up with, I have to go to the bathroom. And I would just and just stay away from him. And he does it to everyone. And I've tried many different ways to change the dialogue, and you know, you find yourself doing this and it's too much work. I just want to have a nice time with people. I like gathering. Oh, years and years and years. I mean, I think in this case, he's really a narcissist, but like seriously, clinically.
But for what we're talking about, so that's the reason. So behind that is the trepidation of damaging the relationship. Isn't that it?
Just not wanting to engage in conflict.
You don't feel there'll be a resolve. So you kind of, so you've kind of,
first attempt.
Okay.
I've just given up.
So you've assessed,
yeah,
and you're resolved to the fact this is who he is. He's not changing. We've tried. but that's real.
Yeah.
That's real. Someone else?
Oh, yes. I am.
Deflect and distract, perhaps.
I had a patient, and her little boy was saying things that seemed suicidal. So we decided we were going to have him tested. And I referred to a friend of mine. And after she went there with her son, My friend said to me, this is a woman who gets a sense of identity from hostile encounters. And the next time she was in group, there was all kinds of fighting going on. And as she left the group, she made a offhanded remark. She said, life is a car crash. And I met people like that. You know, they get their sense of identity from these crashes. And sometimes that's not very amenable to intervention.
They look for the conflict. They enjoy it. They seek it out. Okay, I have the last section because I don't want to cram too much in today. But here are some questions for you. Now that we've all talked about empathy and maybe, listen, this is not the end all, but this I hope can be used as a starting point for something to think about afterwards. So here are some hypotheticals for you. See if you've heard these before. In the doctor's office, nurse comes to you and asks, how do we feel? How do we feel? How do we feel?
By the way, who has heard a doctor or medical staff use the word we?
Yes.
Who has not?
Yeah. I say, what, you got a mouse in your pocket?
That's not what I was thinking.
What might be another way to replace that, that's a little more, that's funny, Bob. That's a little more empathetic. How would you replace that? Instead of how do we feel? Yeah. You're getting your paycheck on Thursday. You're sick. So I don't feel that good. Anyway, here's another example. And I actually have heard this at funerals and wakes by well-intentioned pastors and ministers, etc. But I'm going to throw this out to you. And this is, I've heard it several times. Someone has passed. They lived a long time. You're just sad for you. Their pain is over. What? And I've heard this. And they're not bad people. What are they saying there? You're sad for you. Now, whatever your belief system, whatever you believe or not believe comes after, what is so inherently wrong with that statement?
It makes you sound selfish. It implies selfishness.
Yeah, it implies selfish. And it's also
and it's dismissive of that person's experience.
Right. It's dismissing your feelings. It's undermining your grief. Should be the last thing.
What's funny is that in that case, when you said well intentioned, that made me think about this, that even on this list, oftentimes your intention could be to do the thing in the bold, but you end up doing what's in the italics.
Absolutely.
And so I've heard that as well. And the idea is that you're supposed to think about the person that's passed and think about their relief from whatever, but it ends up being dismissive because of the way it's presented.
Right, and it, again, absolutely. And even if a person lived to 120, you still have a right to miss them. Yeah, their pain's over, better place, no more suffering. But I still wish they were here. And that's important to me. And, okay. I used to do groups for single people. And this came up. A recently divorced man, someone comes up to him and says, she was a witch anyway. I've heard that many times when I was doing groups for singles. What's wrong with that statement? When you put down the source of the ex-wife or the ex-husband, etc., what's wrong with that statement? Yeah. Oh, I thought you had your hand up.
First of all, it assails the choice the band made in the first place by saying that, you're a little dumb because you married this witch.
Right. Bob?
People are often ambivalent. And if you just say she's a witch, the person could have more than one feeling. If you just accept what they're saying about their anger and accept that, you know, you leave it open for the next thing that's going to come up to them. It doesn't help with them to, you know, take up one part of the polarization. It's often not useful to do that.
Exactly, because a person might have spent 30 or 40 years with that person, and 90% of the time that they spent with them was really good. And then something changed, and it became bad. So you're discounting the person's judgment, and you're also discounting a really sad experience. Maybe, again, maybe that person wasn't happy about the divorce. Maybe you're assuming that, oh, I'm free, great. Well, maybe they don't feel that way. So something to think about. Couple more. Tree falls on your house. Hey, don't worry about it. Insurance will cover it. Right? Hey, it's not going to cost you anything. It's okay. What's wrong with that statement? Irene, you've been too quiet. What's wrong with that statement? It's disrupted them, and it's more than a monetary replacement. What else could that tree mean? Oh, well, now you're getting beyond the exercise. Maybe, what if when their five-year-old was this high, they marked the tree? When their 10th anniversary, a lot of marks on that tree. But maybe there was something special about that tree that was unique and it really can't be replaced. So something to consider. Let's see. Oh, this is a good one. In the nursing homes, a lot of people work on shifts, 3 to 11, 11 to 3, and you can't leave until you're replaced. So this question was really geared up for them. And I said, does this happen? And people they had that uncomfortable silence in the room when I brought this one out. A person is always late, and they respond by saying, hey, nothing personal, that's just the way I am, running late. Don't you know people like that? You're always running late. And it's like, what would be another? Now, if you're really looking to apologize and to make amends, probably it's pretty obvious. The way I am is really not the way to do it. What might be, if you're late, what might be a good, an empathetic apology, a genuine one? I'm not going to be hired by anyone's campaign, okay? You know, but anyway, what might be an apology if you're late? What's a real apology?
Your time is valuable, and I don't mean to disrespect your time. I'm sorry that I'm late.
Okay.
But your time is valuable, and I should have been on time.
Perfect. Okay. We have... I'm going to skip that one. Okay, last one, and this is timely for today. They're voting for who? I mean, that doesn't come up, right? No, yes, it does. They're voting for who? Blank. And that's a gut feeling, and that's real. And we talked about it at our conversation yesterday. What's another? Let's replace that with something that doesn't sever the connection, is empathetic. And what's another way? If someone's voting for someone you never thought, not mentioning names, if they're voting for someone or supporting someone, and you're taken by surprise, and yes, some of us might be offended, and we may have that first gut reaction, but I would really hope that we can make the attempt to keep the relationship, and as we talked about here, try to have some understanding as to how they got there, even though we strongly disagree. If you should be blindsided and someone is supporting something or someone that you really disagree with, what might be a way of expressing your disagreement without, but keeping the relationship? To the person. To the person. So that's a good one.
Tell me more
how you got there. So in doing that, you're seeking more information.
Right.
Conversation continues. You're not agreeing with them. Other. Let's see. Sarcastic. That was sarcastic. Anyone disagree with it? I hope you're making a wise decision. Yeah, that's a little bit rough. Yeah, I am. You think your wisdom's better than mine? Anyway, other examples. Hey, listen, you're a great group, you know. The worst thing I fear about doing conversations like that is that no one will participate. So I really do appreciate your lively discussion, opinions, viewpoints. Thank you very, very much. We